Hosting for this podcast is made possible through mtgcast.com, which is supported by a generous contribution from quietspeculation.com, Magic's premier trading and financial news site.
Hello, and welcome to At Your Instep. My name is Morgan, and I'm joined by Mike Kenny and Jordan Kennedy here. And we missed you guys. Sorry we took a week off. We had Gen Con. Obviously, that's huge, and we have tons of stories from it. Me and Mike actually went, and, Jordan, unfortunately, had to stay home. But, you know, we're back this week with Episode 11, and, obviously, we wanted to talk about Gen Con, talk about another huge thing, which is, you know, our PTQ format has changed. No longer standard, guys. We're moving on to M14 Limited. Ooh, buddy. And we're going to talk a little bit about that. Some Theros stuff has actually come out as well, so we're going to talk about that, you know, with the Heroes versus Monsters dual decks, the sneak preview cards that have come out in that, as well as, one hot new spoiler that actually just came out recently as of this recording, so we'll discuss that a little bit too, and, definitely what we're going to be doing this weekend as, you know, there's still tournaments and we're still going to be playing, so we'll roll right into it and be like, hey, Jordan, so how was your weekend?
it was the best. I F&M'd with Bat Control in Columbus, Ohio, not Gen Con. And then worked on Saturday from 9 to 5, and that was fun. I read a little bit, and then I went to the crew game, which was fine.
Oh, God. Do you watch soccer?
Yeah, dude. It's really good, actually. I'm a new fan, but I do enjoy it.
All right. Sweet.
So, yeah, I watched soccer, read a book, and worked.
Cool.
What? Tell me about your guys' weekend.
Oh, no. We just wanted to ask you first, because you're not going to be talking for, like, the next 10 minutes or so.
I'm just my microphone.
Yeah. Just tweak.
Just go make a sandwich. You come back a little bit.
No big deal.
You guys have actually done this show without me. I didn't need to be. You could have started early. Then I could have just joined late.
No, it's okay. We wanted you to get pulled over by the police. So
I like it when you watch. What can I say?
We're exhibitionists of the podcasting variety.
So, obviously, Mike and I went to Gen Con, the best 4 days in gaming, and it certainly was that. We, did a bunch of stuff that we definitely wanted to talk about. Now, I know the first thing that we really did once we got there was Modern Champs. So they didn't have Vintage and Legacy Champs there this year, but they did have the first ever Modern Championship, which got you, tons of great prizes. I think, you got like a full set of Standard, pretty much? You got...
Yeah, Standard Foil, like Foil Standard sets.
Oh, gosh. And you got a trophy, which would have been pretty cool to win, if either of us had won it. We're going to cut to the chase. Neither of us won it. But it was still cool to be, participating in the first ever Modern Champs. And it was surprisingly, I feel it was surprisingly small. There was only just under 100 players. And obviously there was a lot of, blue, white, red. I saw tons and tons of blue, white, red. So, Mike, what did you decide to play for your Modern Champs list?
For Modern, for a while I've been on the Gruul Aggro plan. It's kind of funny because the deck looks a lot like Standard right now. Because you're just like... Stomping Ground, Experiment 1, Burning Tree Emissary, Flint Hoop War. And, your opponents, look around, they're just like, this guy signed up for the wrong tournament, so. But you get to play, Goblin Guides and Curd Apes and stuff. Curd Ape is sweet. It's like, oh man, evolve my Experiment 1 again. The deck's just, it's really, really aggressive, and instead of, Standard, where you get to play terrible cards, you get to play things like Lightning Bolt and Dismember.
Yeah.
So, the deck's pretty sweet. I had some mulligan issues, unfortunately, and played against some control matchups where they just kind of draws that are, and the unfortunate, I think Morgan got to see some of this, but the unfortunate time of getting Cryptic Command 3 turns in a row so that my opponent could hard cast an Elish Norn.
Yeah.
I was just like, and he's like, oh, I had the 4th Cryptic, and I'm like, oh, cool, you could just die.
in a fire.
He told you, he's like, Yeah, he was worse.
No, he wasn't a jerk about it. He was playing gifts, but it was just he won the die roll and actually countered every spell up the chain until Elish Norn, and counter spells are normally terrible. Mana Leak is an awful card against me if I'm on the play because it doesn't take care of a threat. But so it was awkward. I had some games. I made some people cry. I made a Blood Control player get very, very upset. He thought that he realized how bad Liliana is against a bunch of 2/2s. It's like, all right, I sacked a guy and I'm going to ignore this creature or this planeswalker. So. Yeah, it was fun to play, and I had a lot of fun, you know, doing middling, maybe at best. But it was fun. I agree with Morgan. It was fun to be part of the first Modern Champs. That was the fun tournament, though, where they lost my deck list.
Oh, God, Jesus. So, I totally forgot about this.
Yeah. I kind of want to talk about this a little bit later, too. But, like, Pastimes is the one that was running the event stuff, and they're normally okay. But this weekend was pretty upsetting. Multiple, like, not having sheets done, and I got accused of not turning in a deck list for the Modern Champs event. I had to fill out a new one, and the judge is like, well, normally it'd be a game loss, but we think it's our fault, so we're going to downgrade it to a caution. And I'm like, it should be, we're sorry, here's some hot cocoa.
Yeah,
just something.
We're pretty sure this is our fault, so we're only going to punish you a little bit.
Yeah, it was
like
really...
your mom for getting milk at the store, so she beat you for not cleaning your shit. Like, it doesn't make sense to me. I don't...
No, this is my whole round. I go up to the thing, and it says, see a judge. You know, like, next to my name, see a judge. I'm like, okay. Then as I'm seeing a judge, they have to repair because they're not keeping their tables straight, which was hilarious because they had that happen later in the day when they had a beginner's tournament, like a Magic Beginner's League. The tables got mixed up with a vintage event, so you could have had, like, a vintage opponent sitting down against a first-time Magic player, which is just comedy gold. but so, like, they're repairing. I go and have to go fill out a new deck list, and they're, like, explaining this to me. So I'm just, like, totally tilted. I sit down and, like, shuffle up, like, they give us a time extension, and my opponent's like, oh, man, it's a good thing they gave us an extension. And I'm like, okay, so I'm probably playing, like, blue-white-red or something, right? No, my opponent's totally trolling me and goes Temple Garden into Glade Clover Scout. So I get tilted into this round and play against Hexproof and just get smashed out. I just, oh man, it was the biggest tears.
The biggest of the big tears.
I was like, how many Daybreak Cornets? Oh, all of them. Okay, yeah. Cool. I just want to make sure. I just want to make sure how many.
Did you rub your Reed Duke bobblehead before you played this? Just double checking. Oh, that's a bummer, man. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it was very very disheartening to see that happen, because I was up there looking at the pairings. I saw that, and I was like, oh gosh. And they're like, oh, we need to repair it. I'm like, who is running this? Monkeys? God damn it.
we had a we'll talk about it more in a little bit. Yeah. Just like we had some other stuff, but it was fun. I mean, like, so I think we all are hoping to make the travel to Detroit next month. So it was a good little warm up, and it was kind of funny. Morgan, I'm going to pick on you a little bit here. Like, you're kind of new to the format in general. So I'm like watching you play a list you're playing black white tokens,
right?
And I'm just watching you and just like why didn't you do this? I don't know. I realized afterwards I just should have. I just didn't do it. Like I think one turn you drew the Hideaway land and you just didn't play it. Just like passed the turn, and I'm just like, why didn't you play it? He's like, I don't know. I should have just played it. And then like embarrassment happens, right? So then you're like, well, I don't want to show the guy that I didn't.
Listen.
The turn with the rest scoop. Like, actually, I have pride. Scoop it up.
Listen, I'm not saying that I played very well in Modern Champs. I'm not saying that I did a great job. I did pretty well. I mean, I didn't, like, lose all my games. So, I mean, that was, I got 3-2 drop from it. So, was it, you know, terrible. But I just felt my time was probably better spent other places. I was playing something that I hadn't really played competitively before. I'd obviously built the deck and knew what it was trying to do, but lines of play are still a mystery to me at this point in time, and hopefully I'll get better at it, or I won't.
Hold on here. No, I have to do the best one here, Morgan. I'm sorry. But the blue-red opponent that you totally trolled and not on purpose. So, like, they go to turns, right? Right, you're gonna love this short. And they go to turns, and Morgan has drawn nothing but lands, like, this whole game against, you know, blue-white-red versus his tokens deck. But he has an Oriok champion in play, okay? So he's sitting at 12 life, and his opponent, like, end of turn bolts him, and then plays a Snapcaster, and Morgan's like, okay. And then he's like, flashback bolt, puts you to 6, right? Doesn't gain the life, okay? So his opponent, like, untaps, like, plays a land and ships a turn. And, like, Morgan Joe draws, like, nothing again and passes the turn. And, like, so the guy, like, revelations. He has a Johnny Vengeance in hand, and he revelations to try and hit the burn spell and doesn't hit it. So he can't kill him. He hits him with an electrolyze and still isn't able to do it. And then, like, so it passes the turn 5 to Morgan. Morgan draws Lingering Souls, plays Lingering Souls, flashes it back, looks at his opponent, and they go to... That's it. They draw. And, like, I'm like, so, like... First of all, he's just like they're on turn 5, and he's like, well, I'm going to play this Lingering Souls, and it's like, I don't know why. But then the best part is like, oh, my life total is divisible by 6. His opponent is like pulling his hair out because he can't throw the lightning bolt. Morgan just like, I did it.
I didn't say I did it.
In my mind, right here, you did. That's exactly what you said.
Listen, I didn't say I played good. I didn't. I honestly played fucking terribly. And I should have lost some games that I actually played, and I won for no reason. I was like, why did I win this? I don't know.
My games, it's fun. It's fun.
But it was fun, and that's all that matters, and I can't wait to play it again. I bought a Thoughtseize, which probably is a bad investment, but we'll see what happens. Maybe it'll get reprinted, maybe not. I don't know. But I have one now.
Now you're on the I hope not blame.
Yeah, now I'm on the, well, I don't feel so bad for buying one. Like, buying one, it doesn't feel so bad if it gets reprinted. Then it's like, okay, well, I paid a premium for one, and then the other three I'll get at a discount. That's not so bad. But if I bought, like, all four of them now, I'd probably feel like an idiot. But it was kind of a goal. Like, that was one of the goals of going to Gen Con, is buying a Thoughtseize, because I was going to sell a bunch of stuff, and that's the only card I really wanted that was really expensive. So I was like, well, why not? So I bought one on my last day at Gen Con, and that was fun.
You know, you can buy Thoughtseize from Columbus, Ohio. You didn't need to drive to Indianapolis to buy a Thoughtseize.
But it was a pilgrimage, if you will.
Jordan, you're only saying this because you couldn't drive to Indianapolis.
Exactly.
Okay. I even took the Thursday off, like, because of my, like, cancer stuff was hurting. So I was like, oh man.
Your Harry Potter scar?
Yeah, my dad calls me Harry now. It's really funny.
Voldemort was close.
Yeah. I stood in the way, just like Harry's dad. Like, okay, go jump in front of a bus. But I could have went. No, your story about, like, could have won matches that we didn't, and, like, we just, like, embarrassingly didn't want to show the lands. F&M, I play a thing. I kept a really bad hand. The guy turned one duress me. Or, no, I'm sorry. That was the joke I used. I didn't play a land. I tapped out for something. I could have played a land in my main phase to play around Syncopate, but he only had two mana open, and Syncopate wasn't on my radar. He was like, Syncopate you for one. And I was like, yeah, it goes exiled. And I didn't play the land second main phase to look like I didn't have it.
Oh.
I was too proud.
Too proud.
He's like, and just go. So that reminded me of that. Not that funny now that we waited that long, but...
For all my harassment of Morgan, though, at playing Modern, I didn't do that great. Morgan did much better the next day, though, in the Standard event, so...
I did.
So.
I did. I top-8ed. I top-8ed the TCG 1K. What? Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's only 37 people in this 1K, but I did top-8 it.
What? There's only 37 people?
Correct.
What?
Accurate.
We got things to do, man. It's Gen Con.
That's true. Too busy to get TCG points, but not me, because I needed them. And
not me. You're such a thug, Morgan.
So I played a pretty stock Jund list for the TCG 1K, because that's what I know. And, well, I know Reanimator, but Reanimator's pseudo not good. I still see it popping up, but I don't have confidence in it. So I played standard old Reduke Jund with, you know, Rakdos Key Rune, no Lifebane Zombies. And it felt real good. I have to say that none of my matches felt terrible. I got to give a shout out to the only guy that I lost to, both rounds. His name was Daniel. He had actually started to follow us on the At Your End Step Facebook page, which everyone else should do. And he was a real swell guy. We actually, you know, met up relatively, like, round three or round four of the tournament. And he did beat me with a black green rock deck. And we talked for the rest of the tournament. You know, stuff people do in tournaments, like, oh, hey, he's still winning, you know, checking on the opponent's win percentage and stuff like that. And we ended up both top eighting. It was a clean cut to top eight, so I got to draw in with a record of 4-1-1. It was only a 6-round tournament. And we met up in the, first round of top eight, and he beat me again, and we talked about sideboarding a little bit more then, so I probably made some poor sideboarding decisions against that deck, just because I personally haven't played against it a whole lot, but things like signing out Huntmasters when he's signing out Mutilates, which make my Huntmasters better if he's setting out those cards. So just simple mistakes like that, and, you know, having the information that he gave to me kind of gives me a little bit closer to, you know, hopefully doing a little bit better against that deck in the future. But no, it was a very fun time. I got $50 and 20 TCG points, which puts me at 75, so I'm only like 15 away from my second buy, which is awesome.
Yeah, nice.
I got a sweet playmat that I can't use because I have an At Your End Step playmat, the best playmat on the market that you could possibly
you guys
have at
should
this
buy
time.
One for like $1 billion.
You guys
how
can.
How much is it worth? $1 billion.
Yep. I'll take that.
We got a supreme discount on our playmat, so
yeah, we got them for 30. So pretty much like 99.9% off.
But so, you know, definitely a shout out to Daniel. I hope you're doing well. I don't know how he plays because I didn't watch the rest of the top eight. I went to go eat like a civilized human being. No, it was really good. It was a really interesting tournament. I played against some interesting decks. I played against Haunted Plate Mail. Yeah, I played against that deck. I didn't even know that was a deck, but that is, which is insane. Let me take a look here and see. I have some notes. I really didn't come across too much of the standard deck.
The standard decks.
Right, yeah. I really don't. You're run of the mill, I should say. Your decks that you expect to see. The rock
deck. Quote, real decks, right? Like,
yeah, you know, like the rock deck, you know, was really one of the only, you know, real decks per se that I saw. Though the last opponent though that I played before going to top eight left an impression on me because he was playing an Esper deck, which was interesting, but he seemed to be doing pretty well with it. He was playing some interesting cards like I said, Haunted Plague Mail. And I really like that card. I don't know why. I mean, it could just be absolutely terrible, but I kind of like it. It's kind of interesting, and he has some interesting interactions. Obviously, you know, after a Wrath, it's a recurrable creature. He also had Mutavaults in his mana base, too, so he was very well Wrath-proof and could still attack afterwards. But an interesting interaction that he actually was talking to me about was equipping Haunted Plainmail to an Aetherling, which I felt was like, I'm glad I didn't see that in your deck, because that would have been fairly disgusting for me. And I wouldn't have enjoyed that very much.
Do you ever actually need to equip it? Like, you just pump it anyways. You spend 4 mana and make it an 8/8/1 anyways.
So you can make it even bigger with a Haunted Plate Mail attached to it.
Yeah, you can make it a 12/1, but who cares?
I can drive it with my Aetherling too. I don't need to.
Right. I mean, I never said it was good. I said interesting.
You know what's another thing you can do with an Aetherling? Make it a coaster for a cold beverage. Hashtag things we don't give a shit about.
Wow, that was harsh.
That was really harsh. There are a lot of Aetherling fans that we just lost because of you.
I got to play with Aetherling this weekend. It was fine. It was really fun. Because people, like, when you land an Aetherling, the look on people's face is demoralizing.
Yeah, they hate you.
It's really brutal against the Jund player. You're just like, God.
I had to explain that I could continually exile. It's an instant ability. And this guy was like, all right, putrefy. I was like, okay, in response to all, you know, exile. He goes, okay, haha, putrefy. And I was like, okay, in response, I'll exile. And he was like, but it's dead. I was like, no, it's exiled. And he goes, but I putrefied, and then I putrefied. And like, he was new, okay, like, I'm sorry, new people, don't feel bad. You're not this guy. But it was as good as it sounds. Like, I got to, like, look at him kind of confused and go, like, and I got to explain the stack with my hands and, like, kind of, like, had that moment where I talked to him like he was an idiot. He wasn't. Like, he was new and just didn't understand, but it felt good.
It always, because, like, do I have untapped blue sources? Yeah, sorry.
Yeah. I had Hinterland Harbor Glacial, and I was just like,
Do you have the third and the fourth removal spell? Then we might get somewhere.
Yeah, oh, you don't? Have the fourth one, we can do this.
If not, then we're going to stop here, alright? Alright, good. One thing that happens, and I want players to know about this, with spells, it's very, very tricky. He was playing with Dimir Charm, and one of the modes of Dimir Charm is destroy target creature with power 2 or less. Now, he actually played that card against my Scavenger Muse, which was a 2/2 at the time. So in response, I ate a creature, gained a life, and put a 1/1 counter on him, making the Scavenger Muse a 3/3 at that point. So he goes, well, it should still kill your Scavenger Muse. And I was like, I'm not 100% sure about that one. So I called over a judge, and the judge, you know, confirmed my suspicions, is that the spell checks for valid targets on cast and on resolution. So when the spell was resolving, it saw that my Scavenger Muse was now a 3/3, and it fizzled the spell, because my Scavenger Muse was not a valid target.
Right.
So, for new players out there, you know, if there is something that your opponent's telling you that this should happen, if you are questioning it or don't feel that great about it, definitely don't be afraid to call a judge on it. You know, I have been playing and I've listened to judge podcasts and things like that. So I definitely kind of know how things work. If you don't know something, always call a judge, always get a confirmation. And I thought that was pretty interesting. I felt kind of bad because I felt that he was a relatively, you know, new player and I didn't really want to be that guy, but definitely felt that it was important for him to be educated about how the spell works.
Had a similar one where you feel like really awkward.
Yeah.
Where we were, and I, this is, you know, what we were doing when we were drafting. was considering a spell and like had fiddled with my mana a little bit and going back and forth, and had a this player, she and her brother, we were playing two at a giant draft. I'll get into that because it's the best format ever existed. So I'm like, oh, could do this. And while we're like thinking, she goes, haha, silence. And I'm like, you actually can't cast that now. And she's like, it's an instant. And I'm like, yeah, but I have priority. Like, you can't, like, listen to me think about a spell. And, like, it was really awkward to explain because, the card says this. And I'm like, I know what the card says. Like, I know it says I can't play spells, but you're actually not allowed to cast this right now. And she's like, it's an instant. I'm like, you don't understand. And, like, it's really hard to explain. Like, so you got to call the judge over and be like, yo, this is priority. And they're like, yeah, the first time you have a priority interaction explained to you, or that like a spell that checks twice, it can be a little frustrating, especially if your card says this, right? But that's not what is happening anymore. So we had to like explain to her, like, hey, so you probably want to cast that, like, for example, on our upkeep next turn before, because we can always respond anyways. But if we go, like, we're going to our draw step, you now gain priority in the upkeep. And she was like, okay, and she did it correctly, but she was pretty upset about it. And I'm just like, well, I don't know what to tell you. I'm sorry. I feel like a jerk now, but this is how. These are how card works.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just something that it's like, I'm doing this. I feel out of all people on the podcast, you should probably get this the most. I'm doing this for educational purposes, not to be an asshole. And that's really what it is. So the TCG 1K, I don't really want to talk a lot about it. It wasn't that huge of a tournament. Like I said, it was under 50 people. It was really good time, and I'm glad that I did it, especially since I did top 8, especially since I got 20 points for it, which is awesome. I don't think it's anything necessarily to write home about. I'm just glad that I did perform as well as I did. I felt that the deck ran really well, and I really feel that Jund doesn't need Lifebane Zombies. I really feel that I've kind of done a complete 180 on the deck, because I didn't like Redux builds, but the way that it ran, it just went, which is something that I was not experiencing with previous builds of Jund. So I'm going to be on this build from here till rotation. I've gotten rid of all other options, and I'm pretty comfortable with it. I'm pretty happy with it. And I think it's a great time to move on to two-headed draft, which is something that I didn't get to do at Gen Con, but I know that Mike did infinite of. Tell us about it.
So I will tell you this. I borrowed Jordan's Jund deck. This is why Jordan is talking about playing Aetherlings at FNM, so I could play standard events. I played in exactly one win a box, and it was a match against Blue Red Flash, and it was miserable. Like, just like had mana issues a couple times, and just like, nope, didn't draw it. And I was like, I hate standard. Well, not that much. I hate standard. I don't enjoy Jund. I don't enjoy playing it right now. And like, I'm like, I'm done. So I packed up Jund and didn't open the box again the rest of the weekend. And actually, so Saturday, Morgan's like, you're not going to play in the 1K? And I'm like, nah, we're gonna draft a little bit. And me and another friend, Matt Suggett, who was there with us, it's like, what do you want to do? And they were running two-headed giant drafts, which I had never done before. Now, I talked to Dave Nolan, who we had on the cast before, and he said that there was actually a Pro Tour in that format many moons ago. So I was unaware of this, but I was excited. So the two-headed giant draft works like this. You have you and your teammate have your six packs, three between each of you, and then there's four teams. You open a pack, and as a team, you decide on two cards to take out of that pack, and you pass. And you open six packs doing that all the way through. It was a ton of fun to do this. I personally feel like M14 is an easy format to draft. Like, it's not that I'm this great limited player, but like, I've been pretty successful, and we went 4-1 in two of the giant drafts. That's four wins overall to one loss. It was a lot of fun. We essentially just played the same two decks almost every time. I was blue X and he was green X, and we just took whatever we could take with it. So sometimes we just had like, blue red. We had a blue red deck that had double young pyromancer and double flames of the firebrand. That was sweet. We had a blue black deck that had like triple liturgy of blood and double archaeomancer. It just,
oh god,
it was funny too, because like if you play a regular draft format, you'd be afraid. Like, we had the last one we played in, their teammate, he had a hand with like four lands, a Howl of the Night pack, and like a giant spider, and just like things you couldn't play. I'm like, we're just gonna play it. He's like, but it's a slow hand. I'm like, you don't understand. You're gonna cast your Howl of the Night pack on time, and we're not gonna be behind at all. And lo and behold, you take a slow format and add 10 more life to it. You just can't die. Like, you can't die. The one match we lost is because we overextended into a planar cleansing, when our opponent was at three. And we couldn't get back into it, so it was kind of rough. That's a pretty rare effect. So, but our cube night tomorrow night is going to be in this format because I've requested it, because it is so much fun.
I know. I'm really jealous that I didn't get to do it. I was very sad that events kind of closed down early on Sunday, and I wasn't expecting that. I didn't get to do, you know, any really sweet drafting or anything like that, because most of my time was spent in tournament. I think next Gen Con, I'm going to plan a little better, hopefully get there on Wednesday rather than Thursday, and be able to do some of the sweet, sweet stuff that you guys got to do. I think it's a really great transition into talking about M14. I think that we... are going to talk a little bit about, you know, just a little bit more about just our experiences at Gen Con and kind of in general how, I mean, I didn't get to do a whole lot of side events, so I didn't know how well the place was being run. It could have been better. I feel like Gen Con is, you know, such a premier place for gaming that the Magic events always kind of feel like they're cobbled together, which is, there are a lot of people that go there just to play Magic. I'm one of those people. I go there and I that's the only thing that I do. I don't know, Mike, what's going on with this, you know?
Yeah, I mean, so I've gone to Gen Con, like, I went for a few years, like, when I was in high school for, like, 3 or 4 years in a row, and then didn't go for a few years, and then went a couple years ago. So, like, I've gone, like 5 or 6 times in the last decade. And, like, the thing that I've noticed, and this is on Twitter a lot, too, is, like, Wizards was there, but their only real booth setup was for D&D, not for Magic, but we're supposedly celebrating the 20th anniversary, right? So, like, Pastimes did a 20th anniversary draft event, which was actually pretty interesting. Players had to eight players who won these qualifier events Rochestered every pack that ever was printed. They had sealed packs of everything. It was cool. It was a cool event, but there was no fanfare for it. I think Gathering Magic is the only, like, they did a the editor of Gathering Magic was there all weekend doing, like, pictures and stuff. But that's the only person I saw really trying to, like, you know, write it down, put it in any sort of meaning. And then, like, so, like, we played in one of the qualifier events. Matt Sugan and I did on a Thursday, and it was supposed to start at 2:00. It was a sealed event. We didn't play our first round until after 4:00.
Oh.
And we both dropped at 2-0 because the way it ended up being one more round than it should have been, and the way it was going, we wouldn't have had top 8 cuts until after midnight. And even if you were undefeated, unless you won the actual invite to this event, your only other prize was 15 packs of M14. So it's like, and that's how most of the events were as far as prize. Like, it was not that you have to go for prize support. Like, a lot of times if they do, like, foil sheets and that sort of thing, uniqueness is enough. With it being run so poorly, you want to just be able to jam events over and over again all weekend. And they weren't really allowing that for the premier events. The side events were easy to get into. It just felt like, so, you know, Wizards didn't have a presence. Pastimes was kind of lacking overall. Like, they had a lot of good judges. Things did well, but they had multiple repairs from tables and stuff, and it just felt like if it was run smoothly, you could have a ton more events, and it could be so much more. It's already really good, and it could be so much better.
I mean, that's how it felt for me when I did 2 premier events. I did Modern Champs, and I did the TCG 1K, and that was my Friday and Saturday. I mean, I did one draft besides that. And, I mean, that's it. Like, that's all the Magic that I played, which it felt enough because the tournaments were obviously long. But I can always go for more. I was just really disappointed. I guess, I should have known better since I went last year. Like, I guess I wasn't really paying attention to what time the side events closed. They closed at noon, and I guess that seems a little early?
It was early. I mean, the hall's going to close at 4:00, and you do have to remember, like, Pastimes, like, all the people they're hiring want to get home, so I understand that.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, definitely, it didn't say, so there were signs all up, like, Sunday morning, the event, you know, registration closes at noon, but there wasn't any signage up Saturday night.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, like, to know, like, hey, you should get on the site early, otherwise you're not going to get to play. And, like, that's a minor thing. But, again, like, I feel like they could be making so much more money if it was tightened up a little bit.
And I know that they were the same people that ran it last year. I'm sure they'll probably continue to run it. And I'm just trying to figure out the best way to do what you want to do while you're there. Whether you just go infinite on side events, or you do these premier events and you just commit to it, maybe just in general staying out longer could be the route to take, because we were obviously limited on, you know, how long we were going to stay at the convention hall, just because, you know, we wanted to sleep.
Sleep for the week.
Yeah, I guess. I guess I'm weak. I'm sorry. I'm just a weak person. I enjoy napping and sleeping.
And eating,
breathing. You know, being that we weren't downtown, you know, our hotels weren't downtown, we couldn't just walk in and walk out and do, you know, what we wanted to. I think that does, you know, hinder it a little bit. And, you know, working out the ideal Gen Con trip, It is really just a matter of logistics. The last thing that I wanted to talk about, you know, before we left off our Gen Con discussion, was I think both Mike and I sold to Troll and Toad while we were there. And I just want to give out a shout out to Adam and Corey, who assisted me with my sale. I told him I'd give him a little shout out on the podcast. So I'm a cheap shill. What can I say? They didn't give me anything. I didn't receive anything from Troll and Toad that yeah. I didn't give them. I
Did
just
they buy
to say,
the sound equipment? Is that?
I wish, but I just want to say, hey, thanks for helping me out, guys. I hope you're listening to the podcast. So we'll go ahead and we'll kind of jump back a little bit and talk about M14. A lot of people say that this draft format is salt, and there's certain archetypes that you can draft, and that's what you're supposed to draft. And that's about it. I think that Mike definitely has some opinions on that, since he seems to be the grandmaster of the M14 format.
Yeah, that's it.
And clearly, right? You just won all these games at Gen Con. Haven't almost never lost a match in M14 Limited. Two at a giant pre-release.
Yeah, two at a giant pre-release. Well, and honestly, it's because I was assessing the format wrong. Like, so if you're gonna go PTQ, all I can say is the format is slow. So if you build, I'm not saying build a purposely slow deck, but like I would say the last time Garruk's Horde was printed, it probably wasn't viable, right? You're not going to play that 7-drop. In this format, 7-drops are king. The Garruk's Horde is sweet. Devout Invocation, the white mythic, is sweet. Like, you can definitely play. Now, I will say white as a color is crap. Mm-hmm. Like, it's bad. Like, you have Charging Griffin or whatever it is, and not tons else. I will say that Congregate was one of the sickest cards in Two at a Giant Draft you'll ever cast, though. Hilarious.
I bet that felt good.
We gained 42 at one point during an attack. Oh, like, we'll attack with everything. We're like, no blocks. Congregate?
Congregate, laugh.
I'm not saying that's nearly as good in one-on-one, but it was fun there. So Sam Black is the one who, he wrote this really interesting article about essentially how, like, blue is, now he's insane. He's playing, like, Staff of the Mind Magus and, like, mono blue. So like, he's like, that's all, he's all in. But blue is so good, like, Divination is sweet, and Opportunity is busted. If you look at it from pure card advantage, like, he was pointing this out, like, there's not a lot of cards that offer you straight card advantage. Like, you have Mind Rot, you have the two cards, you know, Divination and Opportunity, you have, like, Flames of the Firebrand, and then you have, like, the mythics, like, Shadowborn Demon, but beyond that, you're not getting a lot of street two-for-ones. And the tricks, like, there's not a lot of tricks to play around, so, like, everything's really easy. Like, oh, like, you have Ranger's Guile or Giant Growth or, you know, Show of Valor or, like, Ring Flesh, maybe. Like, there's just not a lot there. So, like, you can draft the decks I was consistently really successful with are either blue-green, where you have a bunch of the 4-4 Bailoffs and 2-2, or 3-3 Bailoffs, and you have Frost Breaths, or you have, like, the blue-black deck where you can just play, like, a bunch of Liturgy and Bloods and Disperses and Essence Scatters, and just, like, all you need is a finisher, like, a Send Your Vampire is sweet. If you're talking rares, like, Jace's Mindseeker, like, I really feel like this format, you can play a full curve and, like, really be happy about it, and you should never be afraid to, like, cut your 1 and 2 drops. I mean, that's my thought on the format. Like, I don't, like, when you're playing sealed, like, it still does come down to your pool, and sometimes you're gonna have to play the white deck, but you're gonna know that playing a bunch of, like, Siege Armadons and stuff is gonna be really bad.
Yeah, I mean, looking at the set and, like, seeing drafts, like, anytime I see someone playing white, it always just looks like they're far behind from anyone else that's playing other colors in the format. And I think you have to have, like, the nut white deck, obviously, to really be competitive with that color. I feel that it does feel very far behind. And blue's better pairing colors are probably green or black. I think that you can have a really sweet blue-black deck. Removal also is really awkward in the set, isn't it?
It really is.
Yeah, because, you know, yeah, obviously, we have Doomblade on Uncommon, and we have Liturgy of Blood, which is a 5-mana spell. Blue, honestly, has some of the best, you know, removal, per se.
Time that man.
Yeah. Claustrophobia. Yeah. There's a lot of reasoning to be that the blue is definitely the best deck. Now, the deck that I've heard a lot of talk about is the black-red sacrifice deck. Have you heard about this archetype?
It's a really good one, and actually I think LSV is the one who's been a big, like, proponent of it. I've seen him tweet a couple of pictures of insane decks, you know, that have, like, 4 active treasons. Mm-hmm. That deck is sweet and sealed. It's probably harder to get. Like, nice. You have to open, like, the nuts, mm-hmm. nuts pool with it. It's definitely really good, and there's a couple ways to take it. Barrage Expendables being sweet, but you can still, like, I think the thing that's rough about that deck is you have to have a good engine beyond just the sacrifice outlets, because you can play around it. Like, mm-hmm. you just gotta be careful, but you can do it.
Right.
But it's a good deck. It's a cool strategy.
I think so, too. And whoever thought that drafting all the Barrage the Expendables, all the Blood Barons, all the,
Barrage Expendables.
Yeah. And drafting all those Taker creatures and sack them all. Whoever thought that could be, like, a thing that you just do in a draft format. Now, one interesting, I was listening to the A-Team today, and one interesting thing that they pointed out is they feel that it's not just a bunch of, you know, synergistic cards that you kind of just put together, but they feel that there are just decks that are in this draft format. That Wizards has put in, and those are the things that you draft. They actually compared it, obviously not in the same quality, but it's the same kind of idea as Modern Masters, where I agree, it's a bit of a stretch, but like there are certain decks that you draft. There's the black red deck, there's the blue X deck, there's the mono green deck. Like there are certain archetypes that you're just going to want to draft, and like that's the only thing that you can draft. That's the only thing you do. You can't just come up with these synergistic cards. It's not as high quality of a format as an expert level set, which is common with core sets, but this core set seems to suffer from it a little bit more so.
This whole core set is powered down. Like I'm used to, you know, not the last one, but the two before that had like Titans. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Your mythics weren't, like I said, the Devout Invocation, which is a 7-drop, which is good, but you have to have creatures. It was, you know, Sun Titan. You know, so the power level's a lot lower. I mean, there's definitely some sweet archetypes in here. Like the black-white enchantment deck is awesome if you like Blightcasters and Pacifisms and Oromancers. The red-black deck was said, the blue X deck. Flyers is still a fine deck. I definitely don't think it's pushed as much as Modern Masters, but there's definitely a few key cards, like I said, like Blightcaster specifically, and even like Young Pyromancer with Time Ebb and everything. The tempo deck can be a thing. So they definitely have given thought to this, which is nice. But it's an underpowered format, I think.
Yeah.
You know, the best thing in this draft format, in my opinion, is when you try to time ebb your opponent's creature and they shock it in response because they don't want to draw it. I think somebody on that your instep team has lived that dream, right, Mike?
FYI, that's a bad play.
Remember, like, everybody standing around this. Okay, so for reference, I don't even know why I decided to share this. Mike time ebbs this dude's creature, which has an enchantment on it, and the guy is like, I don't want to draw that again. He says this out loud. So I'll just shock it. And it shocks his own dude. So Mike 3-for-1s him with a time ebb. which at that scenario, best case 1-for-1 for Mike because he gets rid of the enchantment and the guy draws his card again. What? And we were just like, okay. The guy was so proud of that play. Like, he thought he was going to make you draw that again.
Man, someone in this podcast that playing Modern this weekend, God, who was that? Oh, it was Morgan.
I would rather not talk about that.
Wait, what?
Morgan pathed his own creature token in response to an Electrolyze.
Yeah, but I didn't want him to draw a card.
What?
And I got a basic land. I wasn't completely far behind.
Morgan, I got to throw this out here. You do know that the thing you're earning points for is half Modern. We should really test this format.
I understand this, all right. I understand.
Sweet.
Desperate need of improvement.
You said, you know what sounds better than a path to exile? Oh, and then you know what, your thought process was, I'm going to lose this creature anyway, so that's out. He's either going to draw a card, or I could get a planes. Huh. Shit. Well, I don't like this path to exile very much. I'll path my own token. Yeah, that's the play. Path to exile. Trigger. Oh, a plane, sir. You don't get to draw any cards.
It was an interesting line, and I'm not saying it worked out for me. That was also the game that I drew with the blue-white-red play. So, I don't know.
We checked. Remember, because I specifically asked that player to turn over the top card of his library at the end of the game. He was like, "What?" I'm like, "Can you just turn it over?" And that was like, it was like a Serum Visions or something. I just wanted to make sure because I was like, I was gonna laugh hilariously if it was the Lightning Bolt and your path actually did that.
Like, yeah.
Like if your play somehow tied you the game instead of, oh god.
Then it would have been an insane play, but apparently it was just terrible, so. Alright.
Apparently, huh? I've not played a game of Modern in my life, sir, and I can tell you, it's not.
Listen, there are. I wouldn't have thought of it if I hadn't seen it before. So clearly, someone that I've watched and also respected has done this before.
And you know what? And I've seen friends concede games with win conditions in their hands, and that doesn't mean I scoop it up.
I'm sorry, but back to M14 though. The other deck that's real, you can draft a good Slivers deck.
I haven't yet to see that.
Now, with 200 Giant Drafted, it was a little easier because you could take high-quality cards and also a Sliver, because you got to pick two cards. Mm-hmm. But, like, in regular draft, we've seen it a few times. In general, you need to have at least three Predatory Slivers from a week. Like, two is okay, but, like, you need to have a couple of Predatory Slivers, and then the plus two plus zero Sliver is really the house. I don't know. I don't remember what the name of that one is. The red one that gives all Slivers plus two plus zero.
I believe that's Battle Sliver?
It may be. Like you probably want to have a rare Sliver as well. Like the white ones are okay, but like Predatory and then like you know the red and the green tend to work better. Like Blur Sliver is sweet, and Sliver Construct is so watching a lot of people's drafts too. Like I was watching Kepler last night. Sliver Construct is really good too because a lot of people have tried to go all in on the 3/2 Intimidate Black Spirit guy, and the Sliver Construct blocks him out of every deck. So it's kind of interesting. Like oh, right, so you just don't die to this deck. So that deck's real, and draft is probably harder to do. I would also say it's probably with newer players, and that sounds terrible, but, like if they're a newer player, and they're like, oh, man, Slivers, or the player who's come back, and they're nostalgic for Slivers, then, you know, like, they'll try to force it, but the deck is possible.
Okay. Is it possible to hit a giant draft? Not that that's relevant, but...
No, it is. We did it a couple times.
Okay.
So it was actually pretty sweet. So I guess, like, we had a sweet turn where they banished a priest, like, a Predator Sliver, and we had all the combat tricks to make them cry. It was great. It was a good time.
So I was going to say, like, they don't pump each other from both partners, but it doesn't
matter. Well, no, but all the Slivers are in one deck. Like, all the Slivers are still in one deck.
Right. Makes sense.
I said but it's definitely, concealed. Like, the only thing I would be afraid of is, like, it said you can get trapped by it, because, again, the format's so slow. You mentioned the red-black deck, Morgan, there's somebody who, might have been, Jensen this week who was talking about that deck, how Barrage of Expendables gives you some reach against the blue decks, because, like, in this format, you can go down super low and not even care. You keep hands where you're just like, yep, I can't play a spell until turn 5. I'm probably going to take 10 damage, but when I play my spell on turn 5, I don't lose the game. And that's how weird this format is. So you have to make sure that, like, your curve is really good. Otherwise, you're going to have a bunch of, you know, 3/3s that just can't get past, you know, any of the flyers. Like, it's just, it's not good. Like, Water Servant is just like, oh, that's cool. That guy's cute.
Oh, that's adorable.
Oh, I mean, I don't know if you noticed this, but I like blue in these drafts. Sugget was laughing. Our friend Sugget, who was doing this with me, was laughing hilariously at me, because I'm like, hey, I want to be in blue. He's like, I don't even know if blue's open. I'm like, oh, I'm going to make it open.
We're going to crack that bitch open, don't worry. Well, I mean, that's good, and I think that it's kind of disappointing to already have this format solved, because I think people are going to get bored with it super quick.
Luckily, it won't be around that much longer.
I know, because you know, we have this exciting new set coming out.
What's that called?
It's called Theros.
Oh, okay, cool.
God, that was awful. Never do that again.
Listen, Jesus. We'll do what we want.
Never do that again on this show. Look, that set? Oh, man.
That's called a transition, okay? And you can suck on my transition.
You know what would be a good transition? And speaking of this new set, we got some new mechanics.
Look at that. He just fucking did that to us.
What's that Theros, that one, hey!
Sorry, Jordan. We were working on this transition together at Gen Con.
Yeah, we had a lot of time.
That's fine. I didn't even have Star City to watch it work because they didn't have one because of Gen Con.
I want to make the point this out. We are not talking about Standard very much, and that's only because, like, the Star City opens, literally, the one had 8 Jundman Rages in the top 8. Like, what is there to talk about at this point? New format, please.
If you guys don't know, like, you play Jund or play Blue White Red. Or maybe play Naya if you're feeling risky.
Or Kibler Green Red. That's it. I mean, those are the decks. We had all these choices, and then I think Kibler and Reduke, like, decided, hey, let's ruin all the formats and just, like, you know, have Jund and Green Red, and it's like, oh, our fun's gone.
That's true. Hopefully blue will fare better once rotation happens. And in all honesty, the blue decks are looking to be the ones who most profit from rotation because they're losing the least. So keep that in mind. That's a lot of what I've been reading going forward. And we'll see maybe if Standard changes over the weekend. If someone tries to break the format, probably not. I think it's already
probably
broken.
Not.
But if it changes, hey, we'll be back here all, you know, ready to talk about Standard. But it's just not looking good right now. Standard will hopefully be rejuvenated by the new set. Now, we don't have, spoiler season hasn't started yet, but since there are going to be spoiler cards in Heroes vs. Monsters, the next dual deck series, Wizards has announced the first cards that will be appearing in that set. So, they, first of all, have amazing art, and whether this is the art that they retain in the set or not, all the art that we've seen from this set so far are just spectacular, in all honesty. You know, some of the cards that we have seen are, you know, fairly typical, but they do have some new mechanics. Now, there's going to be five mechanics that are going to be in Theros, as we've stated before, and the three that we have here are for the monsters, the heroes, the monsters and the heroes, excuse me. So we have Monstrosity. This is, from reading it, and correct me if I'm wrong, guys, but from reading it, it is based on sort of the state of creature, per se. It's sort of a, I can't think of the word. Basically, how it reads is, on the creature that we're looking at is, I gotta say this, Polakrinos, World Eater. It's a legendary Hydra that we've seen pictures of, and it reads XX Green Monstrosity X. And it says, if this creature isn't monstrous, put X11 counters on it, and it becomes monstrous. Now that is, even if those counters are removed, as far as I know, they would still be monstrous, since this would have already been activated.
Yeah, assuming that so I'm going to call this going Super Saiyan.
Yeah, sure, all right.
So, gold hair, and you can only do it one time.
Right. Now, from what I understand, like, if this were to be blinked and become a new item on the battlefield,
so
it could
monstrosity again.
Yeah,
I would assume so.
It could do monstrosity again. So that's very interesting, and I think a lot of people said that might be kind of hard to keep track of, which I would agree with, especially if there's any sort of shenanigans. I know there's that Thrall that can remove counters from creatures. If I'm not
Thrall Parasite, yes.
Yeah, Thrall Parasite. So like that. I'm not saying that that's going to be the new breakout card, but it could be possible for this to become confusing. But either way, so specifically with this creature, though, when it does become monstrous, it deals X damage divided as you choose among any number of target creatures your opponents control. Each of those creatures deals damage equal to its power to said creature. Yeah, that's pretty interesting. It definitely kind of gives it that feel of, like, this creature is going to do some damage when it kind of, you know, goes Super Saiyan, as Mike so lovingly put it. And I think it's interesting. I would like to see where they go with this. You know, legendary creature, nothing wrong there. Definitely seems quite interesting to go. The heroic mechanic that we have, it appears on the preview card of Anax and Symmede. I'm going to get
I believe that's correct. I think that's correct.
Yeah, I think
the other one's Polokranos, I think.
Yeah, Polokranos.
But all this right. One, I do believe, is Anax and Symmede.
This is a 3/2 legendary creature for one red and white, so one and Boros colors, so one red, white. And it has first strike and vigilance, which is pretty cool. And it has heroic, and says, you know, whenever you cast a spell that targets this creature, creatures you control get +1/+1 and gain trample until end of turn.
Hmm.
I mean, that seems pretty cool. I think that, you know, being that there are going to be a lot of legendary creatures, that they can kind of push some of these a little bit, because you're not going to get multiple effects of these. You know, you can only have one legendary creature on your side.
Right.
But I think that's you know, fairly interesting. Giant growth. All my guys get +1/+1 and trample. Giant growth. All my giant growth, and now suddenly we're looking at a stampede. So, I mean, that's fairly interesting, and I think this creature is aggressive. I mean, it has a lot of room to compete with good old Boros Reckoner, but hey, I think that this is a pretty interesting mechanic, and it can go a lot of different places.
I think that's the main thing. I mean, this is this instance of heroic. So heroic is probably, you know, if we can guess here, heroic is going to be whenever it's started by a spell. But beyond that, I mean, heroic could be anything. Same with monstrosity. Like, monstrosity could be pay whatever amount. I think it was Patrick Chapin's article this week where he was talking about, like, you know, werebear variants of, like, you play a 1-1 for 2, but it also has monstrosity, like, 3, and you get 2 counters on it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So, like, both of these abilities seem to have a lot of space within them. I'm very, like, I think heroic's pretty straightforward, but, like, yeah. I think monstrosity, man, that one's gonna, I want to see how these all look and how these play, because that ability's a little more tricky, I think.
100%, and especially since it's, like, one, theoretically a one-time activation. I really feel like the monstrosity, you know, I wanted to feel that it's going to be something that's huge and impactful.
Right.
So that's very exciting to see, and I think that having giant, huge, impactful one-time effects, that's going to be very fun to see.
Oh, is that a sorcery speed only, or can you do that?
No, it does not say that.
Yeah, you could do that whenever, right?
Correct.
Yes.
Oh, God.
Yeah, definitely got to watch out for that. It's not a tap ability. You just activate it, whatever. It's just going to get real.
My only problem with this Annex and Psymede card is its flavor, right? But it's a red-white, and the heroic gains trample. To me, that seems like a more red-green effect.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like red-white gains lifelink. You know, not red-white gains trample. It's just, nah. Yeah,
well,
not really.
I think this is also going to be very dependent, and I agree with you, but I think it's also going to be very dependent on what the gods do. So, like, they have the 5 different gods, but it depends on what they, you know, so for this block, they could be playing in different color wheel space. Red does get trample sometimes.
Correct. Yeah, red is where trample bleeds over from green. So there are certain abilities that bleed over from their main color. Obviously, green primarily gets trample, but sometimes red does. Like, think about Ball Lightning. Is a good example of, like, where red will get trample.
Was it Spark Trooper?
Spark Trooper, yeah. Yeah, most certainly. So sometimes red does get trample. And I kind of like this flavor because, like, it gets, you know, trample from red, and it gets +1/+1 from white. So,
yeah,
fair enough.
Cool. And I mean, and I like the card. I like the ability.
Yeah.
The diversity, like, it's not like an overload where it's like, you just know what overload does. Mm-hmm. But it's like, no, like, these each can do their own thing based on their flavor and history, and that's... It's cool.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. A good utility spell that actually got spoiled was a Destructive Revelry. Excuse me.
There you go.
It's a red green spell. Destroy target artifact or enchantment, and it, you know, it does 2 damage to that permanent's controller. I think that's a fine spell. I wish we had this now in Jund. Let's be fair. I wish I had the access to. I wish I could play this in my sideboard.
Yes.
Oh my gosh!
The art on all these cards is insane.
It's so good.
Like, I'm a guy that definitely loves his, like, Greek history. Just like anybody else that, like, you know, is kind of into magic. This era is cool. But, oh, God. Look at the art on the Annex inside me. It's like just 2 Greek people, King Leonidas. He kind of just stands it over his kingdom butt naked. And
I think he has clothes on, but whatever.
No, but, like, King Leonidas.
Sick abs, though.
Yeah. No, for real. And then, yeah, it's just Akros' greatest heroes are also its royalty. Like, oh, God, that's insane. That's so not America. Like, it's insane. I'm excited for this set. Like, I know I said during the M14 extravaganza, I hated new sets, and I still hate the idea of new sets.
I will say this. It is much more exciting when you're on a new plane at an expert level set, because the cards are inherently more interesting than, you know, M14. Like, oh, look. You know, we've got a 1/1 for 1, Merfolk Spy.
Oh, God. No, like, Ordeal of Perforus? He's putting a sword through this thing's head. Oh, my goodness. And he's got, like, this helmet looks flipping sweet, and he's on fire and shit. Oh, my God. I'm going to buy, like, a billion of that card. It's not going to be good, but oh, God.
Well, no, I'm glad you bring up that card, because it's definitely interesting.
Is it good?
So
I don't think it's good.
I don't think it's good, but, like, it's doing something that we haven't necessarily seen
before.
On an enchantment. It's an enchantment aura, so it's an enchant creature. Whenever enchanted creature attacks, put a 1/1 counter on it. Then, if it has 3 or more counters on it, sacrifice Ordeal of Forceros. When you sacrifice the enchantment, it deals 3 damage to a target creature or player. So over time, it will eventually become a bolt.
These are quest cards for your heroes.
Right.
Like, you attach, like, you know, literally, like, Hercules, you know, had to go on the, you know, his ordeals, right? That's what, like, that's what this is. You know what I mean? Like, this hero is going to go on this quest. And if he completes it successfully, then he gets to lightning bolt your mom. I don't know.
Technically, I mean, if she's tapped already, then that's fine.
Jesus.
Oh, man.
And then we also have a Craig Wesco card in this set. It's called Cavalry Pegasus. It's a one and a white, and it's
first
flying.
Humans.
It's flying, and then whenever Cavalry Pegasus attacks, each of your attacking human gains flying until end of turn. So it gives all your little white weenie guys flying. It's amazing. He probably loves this card. I imagine that with this card that there's still going to be some type of human sub-theme in this set, which I'm fine with. It's kind of not surprising. I think with this, humans are going to be our heroes most of the time. I think they've introduced other races. I think we're going to have a merfolk race they're called something different on the plane, but they'll be likely merfolk. So all those people that were disappointed at the lack of merfolk in Simic will hopefully be redeemed in this set. We can only hope, or if there'll be a quiet undertone of angst. In the merfolk ranks.
So if Cavalry Pegasus and Annex and Cymede both attack, and then you pump Annex and Cymede to something, it'll first strike Vigilance, Flying, Trample.
that's
a nice promo memorial. That's true.
Let's get all the abilities.
Get all of them. Just boom. That's fine.
Boom, you're done, baby boy. You're done. Can I say it to my opponent if I ever get that to happen?
Sure. You can say whatever you want to your opponent. It doesn't mean that we will support you.
Well, you're the guy who said, "Ooze your daddy."
Listen.
So,
let me go to your turn.
What's the king of shitty, witty things?
I may have said some things that I regret. But
you sure are no politician. You never regret. You just move on.
That's true. I just try to act like the nothing ever happened. Very
we're not spying on you against your privacy. No, we only know that you had sex with your wife four times a week. Like, what?
You got a hell of a stamina there, champ.
I had no idea it lasted for more than 15 minutes. Jesus.
Okay, so the last thing that we want to talk about was actually something that I just got that pushed out today, and it's one of the, I think it's the release promo or the pre-release promo. It's something that we've also never seen before. It is called the Bident of Thassa. Now, this is in reference to the weapons that the gods actually have, and they have these legendary weapons that they use. Each god has their own specific type of weapon, but this is the one we have for Thassa, which is the god of the sea in Theros. It is a legendary, alright, that makes sense. Artifact, of course, you know, this is a weapon. Enchantment, which is, again, something that we've not seen before. We've seen enchantment creatures, but not enchantment artifacts. Now, most importantly, this isn't an equipment, so it is just an artifact enchantment. Kind of sits there on the board as a permanent, but it does have an interesting effect of whenever a creature you control deals combat damage to a player, you may draw a card. It's not bad.
I mean, it's blowing my mind here. I think I remember you make the card thing. It was our last guest, Ruben Bresler, was like trying to campaign for a land that was also an enchantment.
Mm-hmm. Land enchantment.
And I was like, I don't think land enchantment's gonna happen. And then they're like, oh, no land enchantments, but artifact enchantment.
Artifact enchantment.
Well, enchant effect.
I get it.
I love it. Can we be the first to do that? I really hope we are.
That sounds like enchant a Twitter thing, like a really bad Twitter handle.
That's fine. Like, we gotta tweet that out
effects,
right now.
You know, like, we're the enchant effects. It's kind of interesting because, like we said, it's a weapon of a god, and to me, I hear artifact, I'm like, ooh, history, right? Like, it's like god's history, Greek history, artifact. I don't know, it feels flavorful to me to make it an artifact. I don't know if that has anything to do with the set, like the playability. Like we said, this is an enchantment themed set, so I don't know if that has anything to do with it coming up, but we'll see, right? Like,
I think you're right for sure, and I think the other part of this, and they had said, you know, that if everything's going to be enchantment heavy, then, for example, black can't deal with enchantments. Like, the color wheel doesn't work, so how can they make it work? And in this case, now because it's also an artifact, black, you know, like I said, Rakdos Charm, you know, it was black-red, can destroy an artifact, but can also destroy this enchantment now. So this is, you know, also a way for them to sort of bleed the wheel a little bit so they can let these enchantments exist.
Putrefy.
While also, yeah, exactly. Yeah, putrefy is a good example of that, where it's like, you know what, this needs to, it's a weird way to look at, because that's a really weird design space and hard to think about as a player, where you're like, this is enchantment removal, and you're just like staring at someone like, no, it's not. No, no, trust me, it is. But
yeah, and the last thing about this artifact, before we kind of move on from it, is that it does have a tap ability, so you can pay two colorless and a blue and tap it, and then creatures your opponents control attack this turn if able. It allows you to, you know, essentially tap their whole team, providing you can survive, but you can, or make effective blocks, but you tap their whole team, and then you can swing with your team and draw a bunch of cards, so kind of enables itself in that facet. Most certainly, it is a rare as well, so it's not something that's mythic. If this feels right, it's, you know, coastal piracy with a little bit of a extra flavor. So it feels right for I would say the rarity. And I'm interested to see what the other ones do. Now, my question is, this is something that I can see as being, you know, it's blue. Blue wants this. Blue wants a way to draw cards. I'm not saying I don't necessarily see blue necessarily wanting to attack unless it's worth merfolk. But I want to see if maybe some of these do become equipment, maybe, where we kind of focus into something like, you know, the red or the white, that, or the green that do want to attack, you know. I would like to see that. I would like to see them be different sort of effects. Even if they aren't, then they aren't. You know, if they're all just legendary enchantment artifacts, then that's what they are. But I would like to see, I wouldn't be surprised to see, like, one or two of them become, like, an actual equipment that someone would wield. But maybe that's just wishful thinking on my end. If this is all they ever are, then that's fine. I think they'll all have pretty interesting kind of effects. Only having this few amount of cards is so disappointing, because, like, we just want to see more so bad. And I think the last card that we didn't talk about is just the Satyr Hedonist. And I believe that they said that the Satyrs are sort of, I wouldn't say replacing the elves, but their other creature races that are coming in that are actually replacing sort of your common trips. Like, there aren't any elves. Just like in Innistrad, how there were no elves, there aren't any elves here either. I think the Satyrs are going to move in and be like the elf creatures in this set. And this one is sort of a ritual effect. So we have a Satyr. It's a 2/1 for two, so one and a green. Pay one red and then sacrifice it, and then you get three red. I'm not sure exactly where they're going with this card. It's kind of interesting to see sort of a ritual color be bled into green-red. I guess we do have that with things like Metamorphos, so I guess it's not that
Orcish
common.
Lumberjack, man, that's where it's at.
Or, yeah, of course, Orcish Lumberjack. How could I forget good old Orcish?
I've heard this card called Phil a number of times on Twitter. If you're familiar with the Disney version of Hercules.
I can't not think of it that way now.
So that is Phil.
Oh, man.
You know, this Satyr Hedonist might have to become the official magic card of At Your Instep, and then, like, our associated friends, because of the flavor text. Like, we're all, you know, we know how to have a pretty good time after tournaments, and the flavor text says, any festival you can walk away from wasn't worth attending in the first place.
Nice.
And I feel like that might have to be, I might have to buy a playset of these for everybody, or, like, hope to open a billion of these. I say that like it was an ambitious thing, but it's going to be, like, 40 cents. So.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you will achieve that.
Oh, man, a whole playset.
Yeah, I found some spirit change under my seat. Here you guys go. Anyway, I have been zero contribution positive tonight. It's kind of not witty one-liners have been my role tonight. So
it's all right. We won't hold it against you, you know.
That's good. I wouldn't want you to path your own token.
Oh, okay. Wow. Well,
I think, like, insulted yourself, and then to save face, you're like, I better make fun of Morgan again.
You viciously attacked me. Thanks, friend. Glad we're having a good time
no
tonight.
No problem, dude. No problem. Just path yourself in response. It'll be fine.
All right, sweet. I'll send you down the path of kickass. That's what I'll do.
Oh, will you? Okay.
The path to kickass.
So good, man.
Or if you're in downtown Indianapolis, it would just be the path to Kicka. So.
Kicka.
All right, so let's go ahead and wrap this bad boy up. So what are we doing this weekend, guys? Mike, you doing anything this weekend? Playing any Magic?
I am more than likely just hanging out with the wife this weekend, taking it easy, having been gone a couple of weekends, and just going to hang out with her. I do want to throw out there before we're done here, I have been writing a series for Heather Lafferty, a revised angel, mm-hmm. for her blog about how to turn your Innistrad cards into beginner decks. This is an idea she had, and I've been writing for her, so I'll link that, you know, and then Jordan puts up the show notes so we can look at it. So, shameless plug for myself. Read those, see if you like them. But beyond that, I probably won't be doing much besides FNM this week.
Fair enough, fair enough. Well, I can definitely understand that. Jordan, what are you doing? Are you doing something with me?
I think I'm hanging out with you, man, all weekend.
Oh, man.
Saturday, or FNM on Friday, where I will be happy to have Jund back, because Bank Control is gross. And it's nice that Mike and I hated each other's decks, so that should be an easy trade. Empire.
I sold you back at Gen Con.
Oh, wow, I just pissed on your deck in the corner. What do you know?
Crazy how did that happen?
I just threw the one my pants are down.
The Royal Leon is in my deck.
Hey. No, a guy asked for those, his back tonight, and I was like, oh, it's at home. And he goes, oh, okay. And then I let it slip later that I went to Indianapolis. He goes, you just let other people borrow my cards? And I was just like,
You're a dumbass.
So, yeah, going to Empire Cards up in Streetsboro, Ohio. Carl's Shop, awesome company, awesome tournaments for a TCG Platinum to try to get some more points so I can get a buy at the Invitational for a tournament that I can't play in because I don't have the Modern deck. And then
we'll work on it. We'll work on it, Jordan.
I'll have two buys. I'll get my 3-0 for Modern and just be like, oh, I can see. And,
I think it's standard first, but
okay.
Probably.
PTQ on Sunday, potentially. I haven't decided yet. I want to get to some M14 sealed, but it's just a matter of, you know, money and... This next week is my last full week of work before I start school again. So I'm kind of trying to be in a good mood for work for the last week. So we'll see. But definitely played some Magic all weekend.
I'm also going to Empire because I only needed 15 more points for my second buy. And I'm just trying to get that early and not be like, you know, it be November and me be still needing those points. So with any luck, hopefully I could score the last 15 points and then, you know, earn points and then give them to people that need them. And, yeah, it's being a part, being more of a voice to the community, I think that's something that is probably a good thing to do is try to do that for other people. Give back to my community the best that I can. It also means that I have to play because there's probably going to be more than 37 people at this one. So, darn. Probably won't have an easy 6-rounder go 4-1-1 and get in the top 8.
I can't believe there's only 37 people.
I mean,
like, that's effing him.
I scared them all off. That's what happened.
Yeah. They looked at your Pac-Man scarf and was like, oh man.
Dude, if I had my Pac-Man scarf there, I would have been Kibler level cool.
Dude, I got a Columbus Crew scarf on Saturday.
Sweet.
I'm pretty excited. I have a hipster scarf now like you.
Oh man. I wish that I would have brought that scarf because then I would have walked by the Stoneblade booth back and forth until Kibler saw me and be like, I like your scarf, and I've been like, I like yours.
You just walked back and forth looking cards. Goes, I like your style.
Just until. But it was also summer, so wearing a scarf in summer, probably not the smartest.
Would have been like, Kibler would have been like, dude, no scarves in summer. And then you would have been like, oh.
But Kibler, why?
Oh, no. Okay, so we'll end the show, but I do have a special shout out that I just did want to make. So at Gen Con, my lovely, loving, caring girlfriend was kind enough to run and get me food a couple times while I was in the TCG hall in between tournaments. So, shout out to my girlfriend.
She's standing right there.
No, she's in the bedroom, but she could hear me. It doesn't matter. So I'm saying it in a public forum, so it really counts. It's on the internet, so it's real. But whilst in Noodles and Company, she was striking up a conversation with some Magic people, and lo and behold, unbeknownst to her, Sam Black actually started to talk about her. And he did receive one of our lovely business cards. So, Sam Black, if my girlfriend, you know, gave you the card and you decided to listen, thank you. Thank you for listening to our podcast. You can go now, and we're sorry.
So what he's trying to say is, guys, Sam Black listens to our podcast.
If Sam Black listened, he didn't get this far.
He did not get this far.
He was talking about M14 and was like, no. You read the whole thing wrong.
Sam Black, if you did get this far, I'm sorry, we can't give you refunds on your time, but we appreciate you stopping by. Just like we appreciate everyone that does continue to listen to the podcast. We're glad to be back, and I'm sorry that we took a week off. We'll try not to do that very often, because we obviously know that being consistent is the most important thing. So we will catch you all next week, and until then.